You win. Perfect.
I don't need a piece of paper to do an Ultimate Warrior promo because the captain's got them all up here. I'm going to do one for you right now. One of my favorites, WrestleMania 6, Sky Dome versus Hulk Hogan, Intercontinental Champion versus the World Heavyweight Champion. I'm pretty sure it went a little something like this. Me.
As you, Hulk Hogan, travel to WrestleMania, tear down the cockpit door, Hulk Hogan. Take the two pilots that have already made the sacrifice. Assume the controls. Control into a nosedive, Hulk Hogan. And you will soon be close to parts unknown.
Of space, images begin to appear. Images of strange and powerful forces. But of all the forces in the universe, the two most powerful, Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior, prepare to explode. Champion versus champion, title for title. It's the ultimate challenge. It's WrestleMania.
The OSW Review, the old school wrestling video podcast, filmed in awesome vision. We are a mouthful of awesome balls, served with awesome sauce and a side of sports. We chronologically critique the Hulkamania era pay-per-view by pay-per-view, and tonight it's the ultimate challenge. This is your host, Superface Jay Hunter.
Yeah, right.
Joining me as ever, the fabulous Steves. Mr. OSC.
All right.
The one.
All right.
It's 1990 and it's WrestleMania 6. Let's do it to it. Fool's Day 1990 from the Sky Dome in Toronto, Canada. Now the Rogers Centre, with a much less awesome name.
Yeah.
64,287 in a sellout crowd at about 3,000 comps, with 550,000 people watching at home.
Hold on, it's not called the Sky Dome anymore.
Yeah, it's called the Rogers Centre.
Yeah, sounds like a swingers club.
Hey!
I wanted to say that last time, I was like, I need to bring it up again.
Gotta wait 12 years to bring that up. This is the last WWF pay-per-view to be transmitted via CCTV, which was like how they did WrestleMania 1 and 2 and stuff like that. So, it's, you know, technology's moved on. And so they had 55,000 on CCTV, and that was kind of a shit number.
Although it's, you know, 55,000 people that wouldn't have watched it otherwise, so it's still bringing in revenue.
Mm-hmm. An amazing constellation star sign graphics opening the show as Vince pulls another throat-burning stormer. It was awesome. Our commentators tonight are Gorilla Monsoon and Jesse Ventura.
Great to have the two of them back, by the way.
Mm.
You're missing Shavante.
Oh, fuck off, Tony, and your goofy hat that he wouldn't wear last month. Still angry about that. You know the way normally at every WrestleMania we get the US national anthem and the propaganda video with the planes and the bald eagles? We had a Canadian anthem and propaganda video, which was far better than what we usually get. Rather than showing soldiers and tanks and bullshit like that, we get to see lovely lakes and forests and mountains and Hanyanks.
A nice surprise was having Robert Goulet sing it as well. Splice in that footage, yeah?
Or don't.
Jingle bells, Batman smells, Robin laid an egg. Batmobile lost its wheel, the Joker got away. Hey, thank you very much. Ow. Oh, I'm sorry, kid.
My copy was the Coliseum Home Video VHS, which is 2 hours 42. You guys?
I hate you.
Yeah, you fucking prick.
They gave us the WWF version with their no fucking proper songs.
Hold on, now I'm more worried about the length. 3 hours 36 minutes.
Oh, so you're just 2.5 hours?
Yeah.
You cunt.
The opening match. Right, we got Coco Beware with Ricky, as Fink calls it. Did Frankie die? But Monsoon calls the bird Frankie, so we're all right. You get to see the awesome WrestleMania mini ring entrance.
I love it.
Cart.
Mm. Yeah.
Brilliant.
The luster was kind of lost because later on in the show, the camera pans to the back and you see some gobshite just there pressing the button to make it go forward. That took away a lot of the kind of...
Did you think they just had some midgets running? Or,
or it was like Bedrock, you know, and the Flintstones.
Coco is looking huge.
In a good way or bad way?
Is he fat?
No, I think he's looking pretty buff.
I thought he'd a bit of a gut on him.
Versus Rick the Model Martel in full gimmick with theme, tights, and arrogance, which is his cologne, which is in an atomizer, which he uses as a foreign object.
That's awesome. Yep. What a gimmick.
Jay, you're missing the Kevin Keegan perm.
Yes! Yes! Yes!
You look quite like Kevin Keegan, yes. I know.
I'd love it if I won this one.
We're still fighting for this title, and he's got to go to Middlesbrough and get something. And I'll tell you, honestly, I will love it if we beat them. Love it.
Oh, do you guys remember the Nitro cologne in WCW? Halloween Havoc 99. You remember Medusa? She went around with, oh, there's the... Nitro cologne, you guys like it? And she went up to Bobby Heenan and started spraying it in his face, and he's like, oh, it smells like shit. Stay in it. God.
That stuff smells horrible. That stinks.
Someone opened the drains, like, who's gonna buy this now?
Marks.
Actually, I have to say, Martel, when he heel turned, he was initially paired with Slick, but it was so shit that he dropped it immediately.
Slick is shit.
Shit, yeah.
He sucks.
Alright, start us off. Martel cheap shots Coco Beware to kick off.
There is one hilarious spot where Rick Martel takes a bump from nothing.
Throws Coco to the outside, right next to some big pole. And in my version, there was a dirty jump cut to the finish.
Martel slaps on the Boston Crab and gets the win.
Yeah, he goes over pretty strong. Yeah, pretty nothing much.
Mm.
Coco was over big time. Martel, not so much.
Hmm. Yeah, Coco here gives the verbal submission. He's, I've got a question for you. Either one can answer. What year was the tap out introduced?
Ken Shamrock in 98.
No, it was 97. You get the 14-inch colour television. No, that was Bullseye, wasn't it? It wasn't.
Buller. Or the ECW fags, you could say. Taz as well in ECW. But
nah, fuck Taz.
There you go. Yep, so Martel wins via submission at 5:30. Yeah, pretty nothing match. Yeah. Coco fills the rooster spot as the jobber, I thought.
There's somebody coming up who's more suited to that spot. We'll get
them. Ooh, I can guarantee I'm missing all of the snippets between matches, so if, you know, just jump in if you hear me go over.
We have Mean Gene interviewing Andre and Haku, whom he calls the Colostomy Collection.
That is mank.
Isn't it?
That is fucking disgusting.
The fucking cheek of him to say that.
They don't know what's in a colostomy.
You are a little bag of shite.
The cheek of him, like, can you imagine, like, Josh Matthews or Todd Grisham interviewing, I don't know, Triple H and saying, oh, here's Colostomy Man, you know? Would you not be like...
You'd be like, yeah! Yes! Yes!
All right, the Colossal Connection. They're anything but regular guys.
Backstage with Demolition. Axe says he's got to chop Andre down to size, and Smash says he'd love to drive the opponents off a cliff and smash into the ground, killing himself, I think.
In a tractor, I think. Didn't he say something about being in a tractor?
Maybe he said he's attractive. Presumably he'd MacGyver out before he dies. So.
Axe was pretty good, but Smash was absolutely terrible. But they still look like saps, though, the state.
Axe kind of looked like, you know, Data in Star Trek First Contact, where he has like the kind of synthetic skin on.
Oh, the kind of silver colour?
Yeah, well, no, it was more the kind of peachy colour. Anyway.
The Colossal Connection, Haku and Andre, the WWF Tag Team Champions, versus Demolition for the Tag Team Championships. We got Jobber's Colossal Connection already in the ring. Monsoon notes Andre's never been bigger, and Ventura quips that he's been bulking up in preparation. As Demolition enter, man, they get a big Road Warrior pop. It's very impressive. Jesse remarks that Demolition better win because it'll be a long time until they get another chance. Because there's so many tag teams around, which is awesome.
Yeah, that's true. If they change their team, they don't have like the song anymore, it's just the music?
No, I think that was just their cheap-ass WWE anthology version.
Obviously bulking up for this major title defense against the former champions, and here they come.
Oh, they're on their feet here. What an ovation for Demolition.
They're just not paying for the song.
And did you catch Monsoon inventing possibly the worst word the English language has ever seen? He says, Demolition are trying to three-peat, which means repeat three times. That would make them four times. Tag champions.
97 reference number two. Do you remember Underhurst Helmsley, and then he changed into Triple H? Remember, there was a couple of weeks in between where they were trying to figure out what's his new nickname gonna be, and JR tried to coin the phrase try. I don't like what try said.
try
yeah.
Within the first kind of 30-40 seconds, it's Smash and Haku have a good battle for the pin from a backslide. Smash wins this and pins Haku, and then Andre comes in to break it up with the non-kick, and he misses his kick-up pin. It's fucking disgraceful, the state of him.
Andre can't even stand up, and he's just leaning heavily on the ropes for like the entire 10 minutes. He does fucking nothing in this match.
He actually, with
yeah, he wasn't looking great at this point. I noticed that as well. Like, that was shockingly bad. But he was kind of almost falling back, trying to. I don't want to not touch the rope here because I'm going to fall over.
Haku does all the heavy lifting, works over Axe until the hot tag, and Smash cleans house, which includes the worst bounce off the ropes and forearm splash tackle. I'll splice it in. It's just like, it's like when Kelly runs the ropes. It's amazing. Andre sits in the corner until he does his caught in the rope spot as Demolition double team Haku and hit the millions of dollars. Darren Young, Titus O'Neil.
What's this?
They've taken the Demolition decapitation.
Oh, have they?
Yeah, yeah.
God, I didn't even cop that.
Well, they did. So Demolition hit the Demolition decapitation device 4-3 and the tag titles, a third title reign at 9-13. Unprecedented third title reign, but fuck me, they changed hands every pay-per-view, so who cares?
They actually don't ever change hands on pay-per-view, they change hands on fucking house shows.
Damn. After the match, Heenan reads Andre the Riot Act. Heenan thinks nobody can hear him, so he just shouts at Andre, I'm the fucking boss, I'm the fucking boss. It's like, I can hear you. They didn't edit it out either.
Why didn't you just say, I'm the boss, I'm the boss?
Wrestlers, especially in the 80s where you couldn't swear, are like tremendously foul-mouthed. So I reckon just no one can hear me, they can only see me shouting, so I'm going to take this opportunity to swear.
Okay.
Yeah, and so Andre has none of it. He beats up Heenan and...
No, he doesn't. He misses all of his slaps.
They're the worst. Like, the first slap is not too bad, but then he goes to give him a bitch slap, and oh my goodness, he misses him by probably more than what Big Show missed Vince on Raw there last week. It was really bad.
Did you see that?
No.
Oh my God. Should. When he tries to hit Vince, he's like, it's because there's a time delay when it's like, that was it, alright. Yeah, so Andre beats up Heenan, and then Haku, presumably turning face. Much like WrestleMania 3, Andre leaves via cart, pointing a no at the ring. Unlike WrestleMania 3, he's doing it alone this time, and very much a babyface. And this is Andre's last WWF pay-per-view match, but would still be around for the next 2 years, being French.
His last match, thank fucking God. Yeah. Oh, good riddance.
Ah, no, don't say that. But yeah, dude,
No, I'd say it.
I feel sorry for anyone who's going to tag with him, like Haku. You know, he just does all the work and gets none of the praise.
Yeah.
I suppose, like, depending on how higher up you are on the card, you might get a bit more cash because you're with Andre, you know?
Yeah. I thought this match was god awful, except for the last like 30 seconds or so, and the post match was pretty good.
I didn't hate the match. I thought, you know, the crowd were into it. It was a bit fun.
I was just distracted by Andre. I was just complaining throughout it. Get the fuck in the ring.
Yeah.
I stopped leaning on it. You're not even in the ring. Stand up. Backstage, Jimmy Hart rolls off earthquake puns. And you notice there's no more Canadian flag.
Yeah.
Because he might unintentionally get cheered because they're in Canada, I reckon.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought as well.
Yeah.
So we got Hercules versus Canadian Earthquake with Jimmy Hart.
So no more Frenchie and Dino Bravo.
I think he's gone.
No.
Maybe after that...
the big stomp to the face from...
The rifle butt.
Yes.
The damn Nazis.
He did not see that coming. Alright, so the build up to this match is Earthquake is squashing jobbers left, right and centre with the big whoopsie, and Hercules continues being on every fucking pay-per-view since WrestleMania 2. This is the real streak. He's 12-0.
What do you mean?
He's got 12 consecutive pay-per-view paydays.
Sorry, yeah, but he's not. I love Earthquake. I fucking love this guy.
He's being put over so well. Like, hasn't he battered both Hogan and Warrior in the build-up to Mania as well? Just battered them.
They're down and he was going to injure them, and then the other guy came out.
Yeah, that's tremendous booking. Yeah. To put him even nearer being on par with those two guys is phenomenal stuff. Like,
I think they're doing real well with him. And I've always loved the guy. And I still love his finisher.
Yeah. Just don't give it a Finley.
No, please not. Monsoon. Right, he discusses how the ring has been reinforced tonight for matches such as this. Right, and this is classic garbage that commentators used to come out with. So my question is, why isn't the ring always reinforced?
just buy a reinforced ring.
Please, yeah. How expensive could it possibly
be? Or the metal you use to reinforce it costs more money to ship everywhere.
Oh, because it's heavier.
Yeah.
Nice.
I love KFA. That was awesome.
Hold on a second. So, my next point is surely two tag teams weigh more than Earthquake and Hercules. And there's tag matches every night, so don't take any chances and reinforce the ring. And my last
that is sound logic, Steve.
Damning indictment of the wrongness.
My last question is, how do you reinforce a ring? Do you put, like, steel underneath it so that when somebody takes a bump, it really hurts?
Maybe they have more support, so they usually only have the four blocks holding it up underneath the ring. The corners, maybe they have more now. Maybe they have eight.
Okay.
But that doesn't reinforce the centre of the ring.
Exactly. So what if a good example would be Big Show, you know, breaking the ring with Lesnar. Why didn't they reinforce it that much?
Wait, hang on. Why didn't they reinforce it last time at the Rumble with...
Oh, yes.
So I do appreciate your answers there, lads. Thanks very much.
Very good. Hercules telegraphs the Pearl Harbor attack as the crowd immediately die down. There's an 80s test of strength and Hercules obliges and obviously gets headbutted when he starts to win. Commentators rightly slag off Earthquake for flexing his biceps.
That's awesome. Did you notice that Hercules sold being off balance when Earthquake did his little jumpy spot?
Oh, I love it.
It was absolutely breathtaking wrestling. It was the best ever.
That's great.
Is it?
That
is
great.
Yeah, I'm impressed with that.
Herc builds up a big head of steam as we hear somebody move Herc's chain and cut to a shot of it. That was very hot. Alright, so the finish of the match is where Earthquake downs him with an elbow, does his little two-year-old tantrum stomp, and hits the whoopsie and gets the three at 4:52. The commentators get over how this move is hospitalising opponents. Earthquake does it again, and he's barely out of the ring before Hercules is up to his feet. What a cunt. Fantastic booking for Earthquake here. He comes across like a monster.
Absolutely. I thought the actual match was pretty meh, but like you said, the booking here was tremendous, and I really enjoyed how powerful Quake is coming over, and of course, a clean win in that day and age is great.
Looking forward to Earthquake getting his Earthquake jocks, rather than these horrible fucking blue yolks he found in the fucking dumpster outside.
It's yo!
Backstage, we get a tea time chat with Rona Barrett and Miss Elizabeth. She's dressed like Bobby Heenan, really. She's dressed in like a pantsuit. It was fucking terrible looking.
Do you know who this lady was?
A tea time chatter.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? They get over that Miss Elizabeth will manage again sometime in the future.
Yeah, sometime in the... I wonder when that'll be.
It's a good thing you had that interview before the match, eh?
We actually had Mooney talking to Brutus. He puts over perfect on his record. He talks about that no one's perfect, everyone has fault, and he's going to cut perfect's record.
The guy can cut a promo. No issues with it.
It was an awesome poem, though.
Brutus Beefcake versus Mr. Perfect with the genius. The heels get no entrance. A very nimble Mr. Perfect. He bumps like a boss for Hogan's best mate.
It's going over the top. He looks stupid. It looked like Perfect was pulling the piss out of him.
I can definitely see that, because when he'd like take a turnbuckle bump, he'd kind of springboard off the bottom turnbuckle and do a flip, big Rikishi bump and stuff like that. Yeah. Actually reminds me of Dolph Ziggler. He's taking crazy bumps pretty much the same like Perfect these days. Genius and Beefcake have matching purple attire. That looks a bit odd.
There was actually pretty good booking in this match in the sense that it was kind of built around the fact that Perfect was making little small fuck-ups, and they were like, oh, he's not perfect like he says, and, you know, he's just a human being and he can make mistakes and people can capitalise on it. I thought that was pretty good.
But that's the problem with the gimmick. You cannot fuck up.
Yeah.
Genius creates a diversion. Oh, God! And leaves his metal scroll for Perfect, which he uses, but decides not to pin him. What a fucking idiot.
Yeah.
I thought this was a definitely... Did you just change the finish? Was this the original finish? And you added on the next bit. I thought it was a bit dodgy here. So, snapmare as we cut to 10 signs in the crowd, which is pretty cool. Perfect, he jawjacks for too long as Beefcake does a double leg pickup and slingshots Perfect into the ring post, and then gets the 3 at 7:48 as the genius, who was right there looking at him, just looks on. Pretty can't do anything about it, although I'm right here, you know. Just look really fucking dodgy, you know. So this is Perfect's first job in the WWF, the Hogan's best mate. Beefer was considered for the IC belt around this time, but that never happened.
I think Beefer was good enough, and he was definitely over enough to be worthy of holding the IC title.
Maybe it's like Jake Roberts, where it's like, you are really over, you don't need the title. We'll put on someone else, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, you're just as over without it than with it, so.
What about Warrior, though? He didn't need the title, and he had it.
I think for the sake of this program, Warrior did need the title. I think it made it bigger.
Okay.
I'd say probably if you're going to push someone to world title and you know you're going to go with him, then you should give him the IC belt. So it's a stepping, Randy Savage. Beefer looks for his shears as the genius misappropriates them. Beefer brings back Genius and reveals his haircut from the Rimble. Beefer gets a sleeper on him and cuts the side of his mullet. So you might hope that Perfect gets his win back, but this is the blow-off here.
There's a lot lot of that in old WWF booking. There's, you know, finishes that you're convinced are going to lead to like a rematch or, you know, some form of tag match or gimmick match, which you'd absolutely get nowadays, but no, just over. Move on.
At least we got a clean finish.
Yes, I thought this match was alright. Could have been a bit better, but that was fine. And the fans loved seeing Genius get his haircut at the end. They absolutely lapped it up, so good stuff.
Again, I'm going to bring it up, the use of the word perfect, and its derivatives are really grating. It's now Monsoon. He executed that knee lift wonderfully, and Jesse, or perfectly. It's killing me, man. I have to admit, I was shocked that Brutus won until you just mentioned that he was Hogan's best mate. And if I was a wrestler at the time, I would have refused to wrestle Beefcake, just in case. There's a chance you'll cut my hair.
Yeah.
Fuck off. No, I'm not wrestling you.
Steve, your wrestling character would be so awesome. No, I'm not wrestling him because he's going to cut my hair. So it's like, that means you expect to lose.
Funky.
We have a recap for Piper and Bad News Brown. Shows them eliminating each other at the Rumble. Bad News Brown gives him guff over wearing a skirt and blah blah, and Piper goes mad. And then Mean Gene interviews Piper for the most mental, bizarrely racist promo I've ever seen. The other one with the half black, half white face.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, they call him the Hot Rod.
Yeah, you could say I'm the Hot Rod. Some folks call me the Hot Scott. You know, I guess I'm a little bit of both. Now that I think of it, you could say I'm a little two-faced. But you know, Bad News Brown, you just got one face. Kind of face that needs a little customizing. For instance, let's take a look at them big bug eyes of yours. Look so mean and nasty with them gnarly veins in it. Look like you're gonna pop right out of them sockets. You know, I don't think you see that well. Of course, we could talk about them out of proportion ears you got that are just there to collect dust, dirt, and wax. And you don't listen with them. You ought to be listening, son. But I don't want to insult you. Other than that schnozola you got. Cute little schnozola with them dilating nostrils and that wonderful hair that comes out of the left nostril. Oh, about 3.5 feet long that you could pull cars with, or you could wrap it, you could blade it, you could slice, you could dice with it. Which brings me to another part of your face, your mouth. Now, that's part of your body you don't have no trouble with. You're talking about somebody that knows about mouths, but you're talking about somebody that knows how to back it up. You see, you got a mouth kind of like Ralph Crandom. I got a big mouth! Well, I'm going to shut it for you, baby. The only thing you don't know, Bad News Brown, is which one, Hot Rod or Hot Scott, is going to do it.
Well, it looks to me, Bad News Brown, that you're going to have to deal with a split personality.
It was strange. What was he getting at?
I don't know.
Weird.
But in saying that, it was actually one of his more entertaining promos that I've seen so far.
Yeah, so he's doing his whole minstrel thing, and he says on the white side he's Hot Rod, and then he turns around and he's Hot Scott. Surely, why wouldn't he say he's Hot Chocolate?
I believe in miracles!
On Piper's DVD, he did mention it that he dressed half black to fuck with Bad News Brown, both in a kayfabe and a shoot sense. Just to take him off his game, make him, I don't know, care more about the match, you know, just wake up, you know? And he regrets it thoroughly because he said it took weeks to get off.
Shit.
Are you serious?
Oh, Jesus. That's great.
Passing through the airport terminal half by. Yeah. So, which way is the departure lounge? Right back the way you came, mister.
The lazy way to set up a match for WrestleMania is the Royal Rumble. You eliminate me, I'm going to come back and eliminate you. For fuck's sake, come up with something a little bit better. Like, has Piper had a legitimate feud with anyone in a long time? I know he gets thrown together with people like Rick Rude and this guy.
Mr. T, maybe?
Yeah, that was like...
Minus one and two, yeah.
Fucking hell, man.
Yeah.
I don't think he was put in any prominent positions because he just didn't want a job. And so I think this is what happens. Listen, if you don't want a job, we're going to stick you with Bad News Black here, and that's that, you know? All right, so we got Roddy Piper versus Bad News Brown in a Guess the Finish match. Half Black Hot Rod enters as Bad News Brown is already in the ring. At the start, Monsoon makes a quip about Ventura tagging with Roddy, which was actually a reference to a TV show pilot that failed about Ventura and Roddy Piper as two crime-fighting cops called Tag Team.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
How could this possibly fail?
Oh, it's great because there's like, I'm stealing a purse. And then Ventura's like, oh, come on, let's try to beat you up. And then the heel gets the upper hand and he's like, oh, he's being choked out. And then he's like, he pulls out his hand and slow motion. Piper tags in.
Just like real life. Wow.
How didn't this get picked up? The ref, Danny Davis, keeps breaking them up. And the commentators wonder why. Maybe he hates immediate brawls to the outside.
In kayfabe term, they were punching with closed fists.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, fucking get out. It's not like you're not going to brawl to the back anyway. Not missing anything. So we get really dodgy Roddy chants start when nothing's happening in the ring and it's like Roddy, no, something's not right here. Big dirty seagull pop for him.
Oh no,
people don't just start chanting Roddy unless you're working the crowd, you know, or you're, you know, in a rest home. Yeah, because
On my version he was crazy over. I've no doubt it was all spliced in.
Interesting. Piper pokes the eyes, which gets a good reaction. Bad News Brown removes the turnbuckle pad, but gets reversed shoulder first into it. Piper pulls out a Michael Jackson glove out of his jocks and uses it. Ventura correctly postulates, asking, is this legal? And the ref, why didn't he fucking check it out? Monsoon says, he probably did it beforehand, you know?
Okay. In the parameters of the storyline, did they ever mention that this was a loaded glove or it's covered in diamonds, or is it just like putting on one of those magic gloves or a fucking marigold and hitting them with them?
It doesn't matter. It wasn't sanctioned before the match started. Therefore, it's an illegal object.
But what about wrestlers that wrestle in gloves?
They're probably sanctioned.
Yeah, you probably check. You should have checked them out beforehand.
Never see them signed.
It's true.
Oh, you're supposed to sign.
Oh, God. Oh, yeah. Boxing gloves, MMA gloves, they're all signed.
Maybe they have like an airport scanner. Just in the back on the way to the ring.
Fantastic.
I think the whole idea behind the glove was the Michael Jackson black white kind of.
Okay. Yeah.
But that's all I got.
But then, like, the glove wouldn't have made a difference to his punches, but
it was just
it's like Bad News was selling them more, you know?
Oh, was he?
So the finish is obviously brawl to the outside, double count out, nobody fucking jobs at 6:38. Pat Patterson gets a payday attempting to break it up, and that's the best part of this match.
Well, at this point with Bad News Brown, he never loses, but he never wins.
Theoretically, you can't move up the card.
No, and the best you can do is get the rematch with the same person.
Yeah, always, over and over.
Which is why he's, what, the third match in? Like,
yeah.
His gimmick was over, but I think it's a case of he's like Roddy Piper on a smaller scale. Like, you would have got pushed more if you had a job, but you're not jobbing, so fuck off.
Mm.
But we'll keep you around so you can cut some promos and share some crops. Steve Allen plays the piano in the shower with the Bolsheviks. He drops a billion Russian puns until someone flushes the toilet. Hibbit, that's all, folks.
Come on, Steve.
Okay, I don't plan to hit it that hard, but I'll do my best. I get no kick from Ukraine.
Hey, that's not the Russian national anthem.
I know that. It's just a little joke to warm up the crowd. Give us a break here. Okay, here we go.
Hey!
Hey yourself. I know it's not the Russian national anthem. What is it?
You play the Polish national anthem.
Well, send your postcard directly to him. Anyway, we're still warming up. Here we go now. A one and a two and... Perestroika and Glasnost, I dig them the utmost. And how is your sister tonight?
Hey, we're getting hot for you, warming up. Let's go.
Enough with the hay. No more stalling. Okay, let's do one from the heart, folks. Let's do one for the homeland. Let's hear it from Mother Russia. Here we go. stick room. Sending it back up to you, Jesse. I'm going to get out of here. You can get killed around here.
Apparently, this is hilarious. I thought it was killing me. What do you guys think?
Oh, man. Steve, well, you see, again, you're going to have to splice in the Simpsons footage here.
Is this guy the... See, there's the monsters. One, two, three.
No, monsters. No,
this is not him, is it?
Monsters.
Now, a brilliant jazz musician who's inspired me to do some improv poetry. Twinkle, twinkle, groovy cat, how I wonder where you at. I really love the way you cook, just like me when I wrote this book, How to Make Love to Steve Allen. From the author of Happiness is a Naked Steve Allen, Journey to the Center of Steve Allen, and The Joy of Cooking Steve Allen.
Either way, this wasn't very funny.
Yes. The Heart Foundation, Brett and Anvil versus the Bolsheviks, Nikolai Volkov and Boris Zhukov. I haven't seen these lads for a while.
Yeah.
Finley must have booked this as we get an interrupt the national anthem spot. obviously, because he was fired because they did this spot at a house show last year and these troops got annoyed. And anyway, he got fucking fired over it. It was bullshit.
Funley
got fired.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
He was the scapegoat for it. It was the same bullshit that they pulled with Jericho with the defacing the Brazilian national flag.
He scumpled it up and kicked it.
Yeah. Get over yourselves, like.
I remember I just woke up and I was reading the tweets on it the next day, and Shawn Michaels posted, apparently I'm to blame for Chris Jericho getting suspended. Because everyone just went to immediately 97 Screwjob Survivor Series. So Shawn's entrance in Montreal, he gets the Canadian flag and he's like, first thing he does is picks his nose with it and blows his nose. Then the second one is he puts it down his jocks and starts jumping around. And the third one is he takes it out and puts it on the ground and starts banging it. Just in the middle of the race. Nothing. No one bats an eyelid.
Yeah, people have become fucking arseholes over time.
Mm-hmm. Holy shit, the heels still have their jackets on as the Heart Foundation hit the heart attack and get the three in 18 seconds.
They cheated to win.
They did.
Yeah.
Did the bell ring?
They Pearl Harbored them from behind when they still had their gear on. It's not very face-like.
Oh, it's Brett country, so he can't do any wrong. Like.
This match wasn't a match. It was like more of an angle or just a spot. So I thought it was fine, other than the cheating thing.
What do you think of getting an 18-second match at Mania?
It really didn't do them any good, because nobody would have remembered the match.
Yeah, this is the end of the line for the Bolsheviks, as the Cold War is pretty much wrapping up by this point. Prior to Demolition versus the Colossal Connection, the Hearts issued a challenge, and having killed their WrestleMania opponents, they're next in line for a title shot. I wonder if you guys got this. Vince Hawk's WrestleMania 7 tickets?
We got it about 8 times throughout the show.
Would you not have cut that out? You know, it's... Jesus Christ.
It's embarrassing.
Like, it's okay for me, because I've got the, you know, the VHS copy from fucking 1990, but this is, you know, 2012, like, you know. So Vince Hawk's WrestleMania 7 tickets, including a phone number in the LA Memorial Coliseum, WrestleMania 7 would take place across the road in a dingy arena, thanks to the booking. See you in episode 22. Tito Santana versus the Barbarian with Bobby Heenan. How about that? Now, Ventura quips about Chico's food van / enchilada enterprise. He's awesome.
Did you see Tito's little interview before the match?
No, no.
He's just wearing, like, you know, those lovely t-shirts that, you know, a wrestler on them who's half naked and, you know, posing, you know. They're not gay at all, but, like, Tito's is like him just standing there, you know, holding his fist in the air. It's the most boring fucking t-shirt. How can you go wrong with a t-shirt, for fuck's sake?
Wait, is he himself doing the same pose? Yeah. So it's like an Inception t-shirt?
Again, the usual rubbish from Tito, I have to say.
I'm going to try my best. I hope I don't lose.
I'm not going to promise that I'm going to win.
What?
Exactly.
What happened to him?
He moved to, like,
Alabama.
He drinks, smokes, and smacks his wax. Is that going to affect my mind?
What's the story here? So apparently Barbarian is now part of the family, Heenan family. And Monsoon was saying, cost him a lot of money. Like, that's like buying, I don't know, Emil Heskey in the transfer window for a lot of money. You know, he's not fucking worth it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Just before WrestleMania, Mr. Fuji split up and sold off the Powers of Pain's contracts. Both end up in an orphanage. So, Warlord was dubbed by Slick and Barbarian to Heenan. Now, Fuji needed the money, and we'll see what it was used for later on in the night.
We certainly will.
Yeah, who gives a shit about this match? Of more interest, check out referee Jimmy Corderas' full head of hair. Yeah, so this is a nothing match. Santana hits the flying forearm, but Heenan puts Barbarian's foot on the bottom rope, something the genius should have done earlier tonight. The finish of the match is Barbarian hits a run into my arse. And Monsoon calls it a nice clothesline move there. As Barbie follows up with a top rope clothesline and picks up the win at 4:32, go away.
It was a lovely clothesline, though.
I actually thought that this match was pretty good, like, in terms of moves done. Tito hit a nice crossbody, and I just didn't care. I don't care about this man.
You were saying Coco's looking, is taking the Red Rooster role now. I think Tito's going that way. If those two had a match, I'd actually put my money on Coco to go over. So.
Oh, yeah.
So
you're saying he's lower than Coco, is what you're saying?
I think currently he is. Well, let's wait for El Matador and see what happens then, right?
I don't see it picking up for him, you know? It's like when, like, Billy Gunn got the Rockabilly gimmick from the Honky Tonk Man. It's like, that's gotta work. It's a great song, though, I have to say. Backstage, Sean Mooney interviews The Dream and Brown Sauce. And
yes, gonna get that over.
Yeah, I've written all the way down this page.
Yes,
and they say they aren't royalty, but they've got the crown jewel.
I thought he said the brown jewel.
The greatest of all the jewels.
Go to the toilet then. Time for our mixed tag match. So it's Macho Man and Sherry first.
A little break. Because we're about halfway through.
Are we? Really?
Hmm?
All right. Oh, hey, do you want to add a break questionnaire?
I'd love to do one, I just don't have a question.
Good question.
Question.
Is this for the ad questionnaire?
Yeah. Oh, fantastic.
Awesome. Who's got the worst WrestleMania record?
So it's time for the ad break questionnaire. Who's jobbed the most at WrestleMania? Actual question. We have to have a fuck.
Oh,
question.
Sorry. I thought you wanted to
have a bullshit.
That's a reference that's everyone's going to get.
Yep. Yeah. The answer is 97. So we got Macho Man and Sherry versus Dusty Rhodes and Sweet Sapphire Brown Sugar. Macho Man and Sherry come to the ring looking fucking awesome, posing during their ring entrance. They are full-blown cartoon villains.
Sherry was incredible during this entrance, and she was well sexy looking as well.
Well, it was like, who's the villain in Snow White?
The Queen, isn't it?
Yeah, she was like, yeah, a bit of that going on, you know, with her outfit.
Oh, with the big neck thing? Yeah, it was really awesome.
Definitely Disney villain going on here, and it was great.
Yeah, but how long did it go on for? Jesus, like, it must have taken long. 5 minutes to get to the ring.
But it was 5 awesome minutes.
No?
No.
You didn't like it?
I liked it.
It's better than Tito doing this for 5 minutes. Selling oranges on his way down.
Yes. Cut to a shot of a sign in the crowd, and it was like really 80s printer paper with the sprocket holes on the side, and it's kind of green and white, and it's just like, yay, Dusty.
On our version, Dusty didn't come out to American Dream. He comes out to
Wheel of Fortune. theme tune.
I don't know whether it was the Yank version or not, but it was
version.
Definitely the British version.
I looked it up because I was racking my brain.
Meanwhile, John Mesley is finger banging all the birds that work with him. Like.
Wheel of Fortune with John Leslie and Jenny Powell.
Fucker, wasn't he? He was your man who was banging them all. Like,
have you seen
Abby Clancy and
no, Abby Titmus. Have you seen the sex tape?
No, have I seen? I'd imagine I did because I loved Abby Titmus. She was well.
There you go. I loved
her. With his sexy Scottish accent, finger bang.
Oh, that's fucking amazing. Yeah, so Dusty brings out Miss Elizabeth.
The brown sugar.
Ventura rags on brown sugar, saying she could have gotten in shape for the match, or at least eat oatmeal and sardines. He will not stop ragging on her, and it's just an onslaught, and he's awesome in this match. This is not an intergender tag, it's a mixed tag, so it means men versus men, women versus women.
Which is thrown out the window about 40 seconds
yep,
into the match.
Pretty much.
Followed up by about 10 billion double axe handles from Macho. Yeah, at one point, the camera has a shot of Sapphire's arse, and Ventura hurls abuse at the cameraman for doing so.
That's fucking awesome. Did you see the state of her offense?
Jenna Maraska competency here.
And she keeps doing the little, little bum tackle.
I was doing the Shane O'Mac shuffle. You know?
Shane O'Mac shuffle.
She just consisted of standing whoopsies and botches.
Mm. Rhodes turns the tide after Sherry hits the boss man botch splash and counters Macho. And the finish sees an awful snapmare. Liz, from the outside, does a jock and nerd spot on Sherry. And Sweet Sapphire picks up the win with a schoolgirl at 7:27.
Just a point on Macho Man. His top rope axe handle smashes. Like, he just kind of flops onto the ground. That's obviously part of his move, but I just think they look shit.
I actually brought this up back in, like, Mania 2 or something.
Did you?
Just saying that. He just kind of walks off the top rope, and at first I was like, I totally hated it. I was like, this looks stupid, it makes no sense. But now it's kind of, you know, I've seen it so many times, it's like, okay, that's just how he does it, and it's cool because it's magic.
Yeah, it's on purpose. So. The faces dance in the ring, and we're done. Yeah, I thought this was desperate comedy type booking for two fucking excellent performers. This is the best you can do with Dusty and Macho. Come on.
Yes, yeah. Like, Macho has Hoganitis at this point. Million Dollar Man is still suffering from it. After you're in a feud with him, you're just off you go downhill.
Mm. Yeah, Bundy's still feeling it. Like, he's there crying with all his midgets around him. Jesse played a stormer in this match. He really helped out. But this was like, this is a pure comedy match. Like.
This was poor. How much better would it have been if it was just Dusty versus Macho? You know?
Yeah, we did get to see Sherry's arse in tight lycra for most of the match. It's pretty good.
Yeah, she was really hot in this match.
Yeah. Overall, it was shite, but the crowd were fucking mental into it.
Yeah, like two wrestlers that are this over, they don't have to work hard.
It's not like it's WrestleMania or something. You know? Another ad for WrestleMania 7, and we cut to highlights of the weekend's WrestleMania Festival, i.e. their 1990 version of Access, which included a 5K fun run.
I didn't have this at all, man.
Oh, nice.
Go for it.
A 5K fun run, autograph sessions, rhythm and blues at the Hard Rock Cafe.
Yes.
And dinner and more signings. And of note, Boss Man, he was like at all of these sessions.
And he was being a cop. This part of America. Oh, sorry, Canada.
It's time for Hulk Hogan, and he's interviewed by Mean Gene.
No, it's not. We've about 20 minutes of interviews.
Yeah,
do you want to take some of these, Steve?
Well, I'll just take the first one.
Have you written them?
You can do all the rest of them.
Mean Gene interviews Bobby Heenan. who was obviously rather upset about the earlier evening transpirations.
Bobby Heenan, where do you have the nerve to hit Andre the Giant in the face?
Well, I'll tell you where I got the nerve to hit Andre in the face.
Mean Gene starts off saying, where'd you get the nerve to do something?
Do you mean balls?
Yeah.
He nearly let it slip out.
And then Heenan retorts with, I'll tell you where I get the nerve.
Do you reckon that was like a double fuck-up, or that was Heenan ripping the piss out of Mean Gene for nearly fucking up?
No, I think that was a double fuck-up.
Wow.
Steve. Suck my bit.
I'd like you to take this Ronda woman venture.
Ronda Barrett,
thing.
Is it?
Yeah, go on.
Okay, this is like the most bizarre segment of the entire show, okay?
This interviewer is being interviewed by the two commentators.
And they're banging on, just talking. And then out of nowhere, she comes out and says that she has an adult tape of Jesse.
Well,
you think you have something on Jesse the Body Ventura film? What'd you see, Predator? Running Man?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. It was a little piece of film from sort of the adult library variety.
Wait a minute.
X-rated type
stuff. Wait a minute.
And your reaction is pretty much what the two commentators have. Like, I get the impression this was not scripted. This came out of nowhere. And they didn't know what to do. It was pretty much just left at that. It was just like fade to black. Let's, we have Sean Mooney. He's going to talk to Macho. Let's go.
And it seemed a pure one of those situations where somebody's trying to be funny and they fall flat on their face.
Oh, yes.
And that's the best you come up with, a sex tape. And then I think they commented on it later on where Gorilla actually said, No, by the way, we've looked into it. There's no tape of any such sort.
This was three segments down. We just get a cut to Jesse and Gorilla. And they, you know, he's kind of got the own voice going. And he's just like, I would just like to mention that this adult tape that Ronda mentioned was nothing. Let's move on. End scene. Star wipe and we're out.
Arriba!
This is undoubtedly the most bizarre, crazy thing in wrestling since the Luke squeezy grabby followed by the cheeky toe of the hole.
If this wasn't live, why did they not just cut it out?
I have an answer for that because I was thinking the same. It's because there was something going on here, an intermission or something, and they just had to fill it with as much shite as they could.
Say, cut the scene with Dixie bursting through the door going, damn it, Dave, who put the tape on? Oh, sorry.
Do the men have sex tapes?
I'm sure, well, men are involved in all sex tapes, but it doesn't affect them.
Do you know, like, whenever I hear a sex tape comes out, it's, I don't know, it's a Paris Hilton. Or, yeah. You know, it's around a woman.
Yeah. If a bloke is banging a board, it's like, yeah.
If you're famous.
Fair balls.
Tom Sizemore had a famous sex tape. Screech, a rumoured sex tape. And Hulk Hogan, of course.
Oh, God, it's really meant Screech and Hulk Hogan. Yeah, Hulk Hogan, yeah, sure. Yeah. Did you see the Nitro stills from it? He's got like three positions. It's like, you know, I think doggy and then reverse doggy and missionary and the shame sit on the side of the bed and cry. Like, it's like, geez, three positions. Even Cena's got five moves.
Yeah, so that was that. And then we had an interview with Macho Man and Sherry, who are just both acting fucking mental because they lost the match. And then,
nice sweaty tits on Sherry though.
Nice bit of that.
Macho was really awesome here, and the crux of the promo was that he says something like, this will never happen to me again, I will never let someone mock me, blah blah blah, I'm gonna batter you. That was basically it, but it was a really good promo. It was excellent stuff. Next up was Mean Gene interviewing Demolition, who cut another good promo, plus they set up the match against the Hart Foundation. So excellent stuff, lads. Next up is the Jesse on Monsoon telling us that there's no sex tape. And then we go to Mean Gene interviewing a slightly less coked up Hogan.
Yeah, he tells Warrior is a heel and his little warriors need saving. And when he's on his knees, if he wants to live forever, breathe your last breath into my body.
Yeah, that was weird.
It was also a great promo, though.
Yes, it was. But it's nowhere near as good as some of the other coked up promos done. Because, you know, they do the hard sell before WrestleMania. Yeah. And he's like, oh, Ultimate Warrior, you're on the dark side, brother. I hate the way you worship false gods, not like the big man upstairs, brother. You are drinking from the devil's armpit, brother.
That is awesome.
Yeah. I'll splice that.
Ultimate Warrior, me and my Hulkamaniacs put the WWF Championship on the line. We challenge you, Warrior. We've got to know what the strongest force is in the WWF. And I swear by the number one Hulkamaniac up there, Ultimate Warrior, the darkness that you press your opponents into before you beat them, if that's the same darkness that makes your soul live, if that's where your heart is at, if you ride your Harley Davidson side by side with a devil, and if I find out that the power you possess comes from drinking the sweat from the devil's armpit, by God, I'll strike you down, Ultimate Warrior. What you gonna do when Hulkamania and the Ultimate Challenge destroys you? Hulk Hogan! I speak to you, Hulk Hogan, as you have caused interference in my pathways as I try to communicate to my warriors, my gods. You, Hulk Hogan, control a force field around you that I am only beginning to understand. But each of the challenges before me, I never did understand. I never tried to understand, for they were only battles that I finished before they became wars.
Yeah, what does the Warrior have to say?
The Warrior opens up his interview with Sean Mooney by giving out to Mooney and saying, Sean Mooney, you don't deserve to be in the same room as Ultimate Warrior. You don't deserve to breathe the same air as the Warrior. You are normal, Sean Mooney. And then he goes on and challenges Hogan to bring his best. And if he does bring his best and he brings his best, they'll live forever. In holy matrimony. This was fucking awesome. This was Warrior at his best.
All I heard is that he wants the Little Warriors and Hulkamaniacs to unite inside him.
Did he say it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he did as well.
What's they're hanging and banging. BK's very jealous. Yeah, alright, so it's time for the Rockers, Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty versus Sato and Tanaka, the Orient Express, with Mr. Fuji. Tanaka's the clean-shaven one, for, you know. Mm. As I mentioned earlier, Fuji sold off Powers of Pain's contracts to presumably pay for these lads.
Ah, it was a bad investment, wasn't it?
What the fuck is this guy? What's wrong with you? He turned off Demolition to get Powers of Pain, and now he's sold off Powers of Pain to get the Orient Express. What a terrible businessman. Yeah.
You know, he is trading down, isn't he? That's really bad.
Let's give these lads a chance, right? Okay.
So, Pat Tanaka here, he's from the AWA, and Akio Saito, he is from Japan in general. that whole area there. The commentators get over how the Orient Express speak in Japanese, but Steve, don't Japanese performers call the match in English?
I do believe so, that they're trained in the dojos to understand English calls, yeah.
Yeah, so shut up. state of this match. Monsoon calls the Rockers lethargic, i.e. they're hungover or more likely strung out. Like. So, yeah, these guys, spoiler alert, they never held a tag title, so I wonder if this is why, you know. Maybe they couldn't be trusted.
The Rockers?
Yeah.
Well, sure they did. Well, you went over this before, didn't you?
They actually got them on the house show, but the ring broke, and so they said, oh, fuck that, we'll not air it, we'll just tape it again later. And then by the time later came rolled around, it's like, you're not having a belt.
Wow.
Sean got the much bigger pops from the crowd. He definitely seemed to be getting far more over, you know, at this point.
As much as I love the little trolleys, or whatever, the pallet trucks bringing the lads to the ring, the Rockers could really have done without them here. Like, they're yay, you know?
Warrior didn't come out in that fucking thing.
No, he fucking didn't. Yeah.
Pat Tanaka, that's a great name. He takes an absolutely whopper spinning backdrop. I just have it noted here, he's so much better than Tato.
Fuji bops Marty on the ankle.
He bops him.
There you go, thank you. Because he just like he's gonna, hey you, it's time for our spot. And purposely drops his cane. Marty takes the bait and Sato Pearl Harbors him. The Japanese Pearl Harbored him. And then we get some salt in the eyes.
Which I thought Marty Jannetty sold masterfully.
I thought he sold terribly.
Really?
I thought this was revolutionary and it changed the wrestling business. His selling of the salt in the eyes. He takes a hilarious blind man bump over the railing as the bell rings.
I thought it was awesome.
He wasn't walking fast enough for that. You have to see
that. Here comes Johnny Logic. Come on.
Like, in order to get the momentum to fall over the railing, you have to be going at a bit of speed. He was just kind of stumbling. Well, not even stumbling. He was kind of walking.
He was also kind of doubled slowly over, so his centre of balance would have been more...
No, because as soon as the spell was happening...
No. You're wrong.
Maybe Earthquake is walking backstage.
Hercules is still holding onto the rope somewhere.
Maybe he's just really clumsy, you know?
Yeah, that's what he looked like.
Well, that's actually true.
He looked like a fucking fool.
When you try walk straight with a vat of acid in your head.
Yeah, I was disgusted with that. Let Sean take that stupid bump.
Or don't. Because then that would make Sean stupid.
Yeah, that's fine by me, as long as it's not my boy Marty.
So
my boy.
So we get the bullshit count out finish at 7:38, another BS finish.
This was a quick count out, my goodness.
Yep.
Yeah, really, I whacked
maybe
on the counter.
Count
for
to
that.
Five, like.
Of note, the Rockers look to be wearing the same white gloves Piper had down his jocks earlier tonight. So, yeah.
Hope he washed it first.
I absolutely love the stock kind of chopsticks oriental song that the Express got.
It's no Wheel of Fortune.
No,
he should have like Ready Steady Cook or something.
Next up we have Steve. Don't look at them monsters, Alan.
Don't watch the don't watch the monsters.
With rhythm and blues. And I just have written here, he's a slacking bastard, he is. Why does Vince like to job his stars out to Hollywood and mainstream media people?
So maybe they'll come back?
It makes no sense, but like, shouldn't he be using these people to get his stars over or seem like slightly bigger stars?
Probably makes for a better publicity photo, so you can see the celebrity more. But it does ruin the credibility of whoever you're wrestling like. Hogan selling, was it like an arm twist from Jay Leno? It's like, oh, Jesus.
So, Honky and Valentine, who is now the owner of Awesomely Hilarious Hair, we're chatting to Steve Allen, and Steve Allen is ripping the piss out of them and their talent and their songs, and they don't know he's doing it, so they come across like fucking retards here.
He made some pretty good quips.
Some of his jokes were alright, but it's just, how can this idiot not realise that he's insulting him? And
I think I mentioned it back in whenever Valentine debuted in 1926. It was Jesse Ventura who badgered him constantly and convinced him to dye his hair black when he changed his gimmick.
Oh. Yeah, it was the right choice. Good man, Jesse.
All right, so next up we have D'Lo Bravo with Canadian Earthquake and Jimmy Hart versus No Theme, Jim Duggan. Not a great reaction, contrasting to the, man, awesome reaction at the Rumble a few months back.
The fans had no love for the kind of Johnny America gimmick.
Yeah, why would they? He's chanting USA. He probably thinks he's in the USA. It's fucking moron.
Jesse actually calls out Duggan for bringing the USA flag and calls him stupid.
Wouldn't he be a pandering cunt if he had the Canadian flag, though?
Yeah, that'd be actually worse.
Yeah, Monsoon says he gets Duggan gets quite an ovation. Nah, that's really, really fucking stupid.
Although, saying that, you know, even though he came out and the fans weren't digging him and he got no pop, he did eventually win them over with his hose.
That's much like The Godfather.
Monsoon points out that Earthquake shouldn't be at ringside since you can't have both a manager's license and a wrestler's license. Yes.
Yes.
There has to be examples of that before this.
I'm sure. Well, Bobby Heenan has wrestled.
He wrestled a booster last year at Mania. Oh, but he doesn't have a wrestler's license.
Yeah.
And then he shouldn't have been allowed to wrestle. And they didn't mention that.
He must have been currently in possession of both because he was managing tons of people last year.
Although I did like that they mentioned that.
I really appreciate it. Yeah, that's good shit, man. Bravo gets a bit oriental with chops to Duggan's neck.
Followed by a finger bang. He actually sticks his finger up his hole.
Is this that Ronda Barrett tape you're looking at?
Awful clips, finger bang.
Alright. Wasn't on my... Duggan sets up Bravo and goes into the three-point stance, but goes to tangle with Earthquake instead. Jimmy Hart throws Dino the 2x4, but Duggan gets it and uses it and gets the 3 at 4:14. Yeah, so it's about the cleanest finish you're ever going to get out of Duggan.
Well, that's because he won.
That's very true.
No, Vince, I don't want to win clean.
Post-match Canadian Earthquake, he elbow drops and delivers a few devastating whoopsies. Duggan, he fucking better be out for a couple of months.
No!
Yeah, a huge push here on the biggest show of the year for Earthquake. They must be planning something big for the summer.
Oh.
A slam of some sort.
Jake Roberts, yeah. What's this recap video about, anyway?
It's just the recap of the feud, and I just have it written down that I absolutely love the Million Dollar Belt. It's the most gorgeous belt they've ever made.
Jake Roberts cuts a really cool reserved promo about DiBiase humiliating people over money, but he's going to grovel for his own money for wallowing in the mud of avarice. He's been watching too many Jay Hunter promos.
Well, the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. Here we are at WrestleMania, and it's the biggest match of your career. Why? Because everything you stand for is on the line, namely the Million Dollar Belt. Oh, yeah, it can be yours once again. You see, all you have to do to get it back is go through Damien and me. But you see, Damien and I don't forget. We remember all the times you made people grovel for your money. These were people far less fortunate than you. People who could use your money for essentials. And what did you do? You made fun of them. You humbled them. And you humiliated them. Well, now it's my turn. I'm going to make you beg, DiBiase. You are going to get down on your hands and knees. This time, you'll be the one that's humbled. This time, you'll be the one that's humiliated. And this time, you will be the one that grovels for the money. And how appropriate that the money you grovel for is your very own. A victim of your own greed, wallowing in the muck of avarice.
Great promo, but hasn't been much of a feud up to this point. I mean, we're talking about two of the biggest stars in the history of wrestling. This should have been amazing.
Well, this kind of plays into the next match on the card, so we'll go through it then, but it doesn't... Jake takes the Million Dollar Belt. Oh, give it back! That's it. That's your feud. Like, we'll recap it more just before the next match. So we got Jake Roberts versus the Million Dollar Man with his awesome theme song. And it's the first time it was played.
Huge pop for Jake Roberts. Like, this guy, like, we've been saying this consistently for what, the last six or seven shows. Like, this guy was so over. The fans were, they wanted this guy to be a top guy. And I know, maybe it's because he was a smack bag or something, I don't know, but he just never really made it to the level that the fans wanted him to.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like he's well above IC, but not for the world, so they'll just only consider him if he's going to get the world belt, maybe.
That sucks. Mm.
Did you see his... A few people had his poster in the crowd. It was him, like, standing in a provocative pose, rat with a snake wrapped around him.
It was a Rick Rude pose, was it?
Yeah, it was kind of like you'd see some porn star, almost.
That's absolutely horrifying.
It was.
Jake starts off hot, but crashes and burns, missing a dropkick into the corner. It was a cool spot.
What a metaphor for his life.
Oh, yeah. Million Dollar Man gets a spoon and starts burning some crack. Million Dollar Man follows up with a lovely safe pile driver. Now DiBiase hits the Million Dollar Dream, but Jake manages to get a foot on the ropes. DiBiase allows Jake to get to his feet before getting countered with his double axe handle nothing. at this point, so Jake's on the ground, Million Dollar Man is kind of perched on the dangerous second rope, waiting to give him a double axe handle. Why do you wait for him to, you know, for a minute for him to fully recover before hitting the move?
Yeah, and I've noticed what they like doing is somebody on the top rope waits for somebody to turn around and face them. But you do as much damage, if not more, if you hit them on the back of the head.
Far more if you don't see it coming, yeah.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the storyline of the match. Jake trying to hit the DDT, Million Dollar Man avoiding it. The crowd are mental wanting a DDT. I think that's just fantastic conditioning of the fans. It's like, every time you see a DDT, that's the end of the match, that's the pinfall.
Yeah. And once he kind of hits his short-armed clothesline, like, the fans are programmed to know that it's coming. Although his signal for the DDT is a bit... is a big kick, isn't it? Yeehaw! Arriba! You know, it's like, oh, come on.
Is that the first... You know the way three-letter... acronyms are massive these days. RKO, OOC,
JKH.
Like, chanting DDT, that's the first kind of three-letter acronym chant that I remember.
WWF. WWF.
Arriba.
Is DDT stand for?
Well, you see... I heard, and this is wrong, but I can't remember what's the actual correct term. Damien's Dinner Time, but that's not real. That's
No, it's not.
Really?
No.
Oh.
It's like diethyl dichloride tetra...
acetic acid.
Yeah. It was a pesticide that ended up having absolutely horrific nervous system damage, like, you know, for people eating crops and shit like that.
Jeez, tell Bad News Brand to watch out.
Chicken's not a crop.
Yes. God, that was going to go dark, and I just in front of
it. Shut up, Jay. Just stop. Just give me the shovel now. Digging that hole.
The crowd really come alive for this match, despite them, like, motoring through the spots here. Virgil pulls Jake outside and gets decked and slammed for his troubles. Snake counters another Million Dollar Dream, but Virgil throws DiBiase into the ring just before the 10 count ends. Hooray! Hooray! The fucking Duggan finish here. Another BS finished at 11:52. And guess what? It's the fucking blow-off to this feud. Million Dollar Man's taking the summer off and still no job.
Fuck's sake.
So hold on, Million Dollar Man is taking the summer off.
Yeah.
But he still had to win.
By count out, yes.
That makes absolutely no sense.
Yep.
I also like to point out that Jesse did an absolutely awesome job explaining why you can win this belt on a count out, because it's a non-sanctioned title.
Yeah, that
was phenomenal.
So after the match, DiBiase gets his Million Dollar belt back, which was the point of it all along. It's a non-sanctioned belt, and it was on display at the start of the match. He got a shot of it. Why not just take it and leave?
Yeah,
so many fuck finishes, man. I was watching this with Greg, man, and between noting, where's Big Bum Bagelow? Obviously. Bam Bam Bigelow.
Yeah, that's so awesome.
I was just saying, like, do you just, like, kind of get your finish in the main event? And so you get so many fuck finishes earlier on in the card that it makes the main event more special.
That's a good point. And at this point in time, the Mania cards were one-match shows. You know, like, you might have one tag match or something that the fans kind of want to see. It doesn't really matter what you do in the card as long as main event delivers, which is a point I'll get to later on.
Awesome balls. Jake gets his heat back post-match. So he gets the $1 bills and hands them out to the crowd. And Mary Tyler Moore is there with her own 100, you know, she got out of her wallet. Jake stuffs one in DiBiase's mouth, which was immediately taken out. So
yeah, that's kind of sucked, isn't it?
He gets out Damien, but Virgil gets DiBiase out of the ring and the heel Scarper. Holy shit, see the fucking size of this python.
This was large.
It was ridiculous. This is a different snake. This has to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless it's been bulking up with Andre, obviously.
Despite this finish, I actually thought that this was the match of the night so far.
Oh, fuck off.
No really? Way.
Well, Steve, this was fucking terrible.
I thought, you know, with the fans going mental for the DDT and things like that, up to this point, like, this was... probably the better, the best match.
Technically, you probably got a point, but it's only because the standard is very low at this
yes,
point.
Yes, it was. It was.
I preferred the colostomy connection match. Yeah, I did.
The match was...
Jesus Christ. Splice in picture, Steve Trace.
I think my cerebellum just fused. Backstage, Mean Gene interviews the former corrections officer... A really thin-looking face, big boss.
Listen,
man.
Mean Gene. As far as I'm concerned, Ted DiBiase is scum. He may be rich scum, but he's scum nonetheless. And I don't take money from scum. I don't take money from anybody. I may be poor, but I'm proud. Proud to walk into the ring without some skinny, pimp-like manager at my side. Proud to walk into the ring on my own without some tribal reject from Africa who's too fat to fit in a pot. And I'm proud to wear the badge. But most of all, I'm proud to be an American.
No, I thought this was an excellent promo.
Yeah, yeah, I'll spicy splice. He slags the $1 million man. He says he's proud to be poor. Would that make him Ray Trailer Park Trash?
Nice.
And he denounces Slick, calling him a skinny pimp. And says Akeem's too fat to fit in the butt.
In the...
What?
No, I'm serious.
Up until, like, 6 weeks ago, Boss Man was just as fat as him. That's like those cunt ex-smokers, like, you know?
So now he's face, right?
Yes.
Which he confirms by signing off with saying that he loves America.
Come on. I'm sure even the heels love their own country.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
Yeah, Dino Bravo.
Yeah. Yeah, but he doesn't love America, so that makes him.
Yeah, so that makes him heel.
Oh, who are you facing this country, though?
Just prior to the Bosman promo, we had Sean Mooney interviewing Akeem and Slick. Slick was absolutely awful. Although this was the promo that had the Law drop, you know, the TNA segment, and they've got his little song, and it's like,
I'm just about the happiest man in the world right now.
It was a terrible promo. Absolutely woeful. And Akeem speaks. Is this the first time we've heard him speak?
What's he sound like?
No.
Just a normal bloke. So, a normal American dude.
Should he not be like a jive sucker or something? You know, like speak like Slick. Well, not even like Slick.
Jive cracker?
Yeah.
Yeah, but Africans don't talk like that. They don't talk like Slick, they talk like, I'm not going to.
Boss man, there are two things in this world that don't last very long. Number one is dogs that chases cars. And number two is law enforcement officers who won't take the money.
Akeem, his gimmick with the whaler, you know, his gimmick is actually a parody of someone Vince didn't have at the time.
Is it a parody of Dusty?
Yes! Very good. Well done. But then when they got Dusty in, it's the point. The Jive Soul Bros come to the ring. It's Akeem with Slick versus the Big Boss Man, who has the awesome Hard Time song. Did Vince pay for yours?
That's a great team, though.
Vince is a fucking cheap guy, isn't he? He's parsimonious, and he's also quite beniggered. Look it up!
Yes.
18 episodes to break that out. On February 3rd, Superstars, Jake got the $1 million belt and Bossman stole it back for Ted DiBiase. And Bossman was to present it to DiBiase on the Brother Love show. But he 180'd when he found out that DiBiase had paid Slick to do it. And he said, "Oh, I stand for law and order and I can never be bought." And so he turns face and he gives... Shit.
Don't you blame me, you've been doing that a lot in this show.
I don't have a cushion.
I haven't done it once.
You've done it 10 times. Bossman says he stands for law and order and can never be bought.
Since when?
Since
fucking now.
And he just gave the belt back to Jake Roberts, who stole the belt to begin with.
Yes.
Where's the law? The law can only help punish you, not protect you.
Right. See this whole gimmick of I stand for law and justice and shit. I'm pretty certain you're not actually a policeman. Aren't you just a prison guard?
Yes.
So he doesn't stand for anything. He's just a guy that works in a prison.
Yeah, security.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, but so as long as we're clear here that
I think he just turned really because he felt he was being used, and so Slick no longer was looking out for him. He was just taking a payday off Bossman.
Okay.
That's me saying that. That's not the WWF saying that. So that's me trying to explain that.
I'll take it.
The commentators bring attention to a really dodgy looking planted sign that says "Bossman can't be bought." You know, it's Jesus, who'd write that, you know? Just before the match starts, as a surprise, because we didn't get any build-up, DiBiase is still at ringside and he beats up the Boss Boob. There's no bell ring. I'm glad they didn't just throw the match out, even though the ref should have given Bossman time to recover.
There's an absolutely hilarious spot, this is right at the start, where Bossman has a came in the corner, and he tries to lift him out of it to hit a slam or something, and fails so badly that Bossman can't even cover up, and he just pulls a Foxy Stout. And he's just like, "Oh, he failed that spot."
He gets Akeem about 5 inches off the ground with the Bossman slam and gets the 3 at 154.
I actually thought he'd do alright with the Bossman slam.
I think only Hogan getting choke slammed is any lower than that. Are you guys sad about this? It's the last pay-per-view for Akeem.
No. A
little bit.
Really?
Yeah, I missed Akeem.
Slagging him and him fisting in the corner.
The teapot, yeah.
Strangely effeminate hands.
No, I always kind of liked him, yeah.
But he will return for one night only at WrestleMania X7 in the gimmick Battle Royal.
As, oh my god.
That's the one. Okay, awesome. It is time for the Honky Tonk Man and your boy, Greg Valentine, who's dyed his hair black. This is the cool spot where they get driven to the ring, they get chauffeured by Diamond Dallas Page.
Fuck off.
That's right, yeah.
He's a chauffeur.
Wow.
Monsoon casts aspersions about the validity of Honky's gold record for Honka Honka...
Honka.
Honka.
Honka Love.
Honka Love.
Honka Honka Honky Love, is it? Or is it Honka 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 Honky Love?
That was it. Now you got it.
Don't be racist with that. Awful lot of honkies in here. The Honkettes accompany him to the ring. They do a rendition of their new song, Honka Honka.
Four honkas and a honky.
And a partridge in a pear
tree. Yeah, they're generally off by a full second during the rendition of the song, and Valentine is inaudible. It's horrific, you know.
He's the worst fake guitar player I've ever seen. With his one chord, with his no capo bar about 14 frets up, doesn't move the fingers. The Honkettes were terrifying with their clown makeup. My God, they looked like it. We all float down here.
There he is. They're just singing along to the stadium noise instead of what they should be singing to, which is the feed. So, thankfully, they get it together just about by the end. The Bushwhackers take off their merch disguises, clear the ring, and destroy the cheapest equipment available in the ring. So, you know, it's the stands for the mic, you know.
Carefully place the guitar on the floor.
Yeah, not a great reaction. Would this have been better if they had a match?
This would have been better if they just had played the whole song. I fucking hate the Bushwhackers.
Monsoon and Ventura get over the attendance tonight, which is 67,678.
Which I'd like to point out is about 4,000 more than what they opened the show up
with. Awesome. Stitch that, Mitchie. It's really 64,287, so it's not too much of an
impression. That's not bad. Jesus Christ, that's not bad at all.
It's an impressive number, 3,000 less than they mentioned, so not the biggest inflation. Mm. Of all time, which was 3 years prior. Monsoon says it'll be even bigger next year. Nope. It'll be over 50,000 less.
Jeez. That is bad. I don't know. Holy shit.
Cut to some bird with nice tits. Yeah, I did write that.
Okay.
Fair enough.
And 80s jocks that turns around when the camera's on her.
Oh, yeah, I noticed that. She had no bra.
Yeah.
How did I never miss this stuff?
Yeah, you're Mr. Eagle Eyes. Canto. Some guy comes to the commentator's desk and it sounds like Art Donovan. It's Steve Allen. It's your boy.
Oh, good stuff.
Yeah, he's the dude from the shower. It's Rick Rude with Bobby Heenan versus Jimmy Superfly Snuka. And there's no bell rung again.
Both men are monstrous. Mm-hmm. My goodness. This match kind of opened up well, you know. It was quick. And then the fans popped huge for Snuka doing the Rude swivel hips. And I have written in brackets here, if only they knew... murder. I also noticed here that Snuka just seems kind of reckless, doesn't he? He's like, he just seems dangerous. Like, there is a much higher possibility of being hurt while wrestling this man than most of the other people on the roster. Like,
one of the worst things you can call a wrestler. It's unsafe.
He just seemed sloppy and reckless.
Yeah, fucking back body drops. Snuka hits a few, Rude counters a few, hits a few, and hits the Rude Awakening and gets the 3 at 3:42. Well, I'm a poet and I don't even know it.
Hey, Snuka completely no-sells it. He fucking jumps up. And then it was really strange, and then Rude just walks out without celebrating, just walks back up.
Yeah, this sucked. There was no even post-match angle, like you said. He just walked back. Bam, end of story.
So how do you think Rude was portrayed in this pay-per-view?
At least he won.
Like,
he
didn't completely look forgettable.
Yeah, he wasn't booked to be a star here at all.
Yeah, that's pretty odd, because he has an important role at SummerSlam, so he should have got the earthquake push, basically.
Interesting. You
know? I reckon Rude was pissed off with this match, because this is in the fucking death spot of the show. Yeah. This is where you should bring out Rock and Robin, like, you know what I mean, against the fucking Terminator and Judy Martin.
Before Warrior and Hogan was inked, Macho Man was the number one contender. They actually faced Main Event Saturday Night's Main Event at February 23rd. Now, Vince offered Mike Tyson $1 million to ref the big match. Don't sound familiar. 98. So he actually wanted to do a bit of, you know, instead of Austin Tyson Michaels, it was Hogan Tyson Warrior. But after Tyson had the cheek to go get himself knocked out by James Douglas, Vince nixed it and spent 11% of that $1 million on Buster Douglas instead.
So hold on, Buster Douglas ref this match.
That's Saturday Night Spider Man, yeah.
Okay. So, but Macho was never lined up ever to be in the main event of WrestleMania.
No.
Like, Warriors penciled in from like SummerSlam last year.
Yeah.
They were pushing him hard and were hoping it was going to go that way, but they were still putting their money on Zeus. Like. Oh, yeah.
Ever since that awesome pose down with Rick Rude, I bet you Vince is like, bam, main event.
Yeah.
He is going to main event one day.
Some nice long-term booking, but they didn't really cement Warrior going to WrestleMania until the Rumble when they did the spot. So I reckon, God, what else did you have? Like, because Zeus fell through, so if Warrior fell through, they'd probably just do Savage again or something.
Yeah. Which would have drawn still, because Savage was great. We get the fucking awesome recap of the Hogan Warrior feud. I was just like, just from watching this recap, and I was like, oh my God, I am excited to watch this match. This, probably for the first time since Hogan Savage, like, this has big match feel. It doesn't happen that often in wrestling. Plus, crisscross, baby! I fucking love the crisscross.
Huge big match feel. Dare I say, a bigger big match feel than WrestleMania 3.
I agree with that.
Watching the Rumble, I couldn't wait to watch WrestleMania.
Okay.
So it's time for the main event. It's the Ultimate Challenge, title for title. The IC champ, the Ultimate Warrior, versus the World Wrestling Federation champion, Hulk Hogan. Holy fucking shit, you stacked the main event, and this match could not be any bigger. Holy shit. I was watching the Silver Vision version and it went straight into Warrior's entrance and I was like, fuck that, and I found the WWF Anthology version to see the build up again, you know?
Nice.
So, highlights of the build up. They had the two facing off at the Rumble, Warrior hitting Hogan by accident at Saturday night's main event, Hogan saving Warrior from the earthquake at the main event a bit time later. Warrior doesn't appreciate it. Vice versa happens at the wrestling challenge. Steve, did you catch that earthquake in his Bastion Booger jocks?
Yeah, actually, it was an improvement over those horrible blue yolks.
Oh, I don't know. I think brown is the most unflattering colour of them all. It really is. In terms of clothes.
Steve is wearing a brown t-shirt.
I actually didn't cop that. I meant in terms of, like, a fucking onesie.
A onesie. Yeah. Steve is wearing a brown
t-shirt. Excellent.
Yes, just on Wrestling Challenge there, the Warrior runs the ropes and considers clotheslining Hogan, but he stops himself and leaves the ring. A TV special aired the week before Mania called the Ultimate Challenge Special, which had a contract signing to the match touted as the biggest.
He said to the max there. Yeah. It's like, geez, we're really in the 90s now.
It was amazing, though, the signing, because, all right, Hogan is there on one side of the table, and in the middle is President Funny Jack Tunney, and on the other side is the Warrior. But when the cutting promos, it turns to, like, a POV shot from the other wrestler. So instead of, you know, facing like this, it's like you get a shot on a Warrior's face shouting into the camera.
That's fucking cool.
It's awesome. It is awesome. Breaks kayfabe, that means you cut this promo twice. Each other one thinks that they're being a heelish cunt, and that's the crux of their promos.
Okay.
This is the first time they're doing face versus face in the main event, and the first time they're doing title for title. So, and, you know, you get the 64,000 fans in the dance. You know, so it's just a lot of interest going into it, because these are all revolutionary things, you know? And what are you going to do with the belt? What happens when someone has two belts? Because the IC champ used to kind of main event house shows and stuff like that. The intrigue was like, which one of you guys is going to turn heel, you know? Both of you have these monster finishers that no one kicks out of. Who's going to hit their finisher first is going to win. So that's pretty awesome. And the build-up of it, Steve, you'll love it, is that Ventura, it was his own wrestling challenge on the weeks leading up to it. Ventura would come out one week and he'd be dressed in Ultimate Warrior garb. He's like, yeah, Ultimate Warrior's going to win. Next week, all Hulkamania garb. Yeah, Hulk Hogan's going to win. Because he's only sides with heels, but in the face-face, he's, you know, got nowhere to go.
Yeah.
So in the last week, he had, like, Warrior cap and Hogan top. And, like, I'm going for both. We're going to win.
What he could have done was do, like, a Roddy Piper and, like, spray tan half his body, and then the second half he can, like, tan more, because that's the Hogan song.
The stage is set. The walk with a different force built around you, but no one in the Royal Rumble shall form a team. Every man shall fight for what he feels is in himself, and I, the Ultimate Warrior, will fulfill another destiny. Interference in my pathways.
Perfect! Hulkster, the only 2 out of 30 remaining in the Royal Rumble!
Ultimate Warrior, me and my Hulkamaniacs put the championship on the line.
With the authorization of the World Wrestling Federation President Jack Tunney,
stating that the main event in WrestleMania 6 would be the Ultimate Warrior squaring off against Hulk Hogan.
The only question left to be answered is whose title will be at stake.
It is my decision that for the first time in World Wrestling Federation history, champion versus champion, title for title.
But at WrestleMania 6, Hulk Hogan, I bring you the Ultimate Warrior. I bring you the Ultimate Challenge. I bring you Hulk Hogan. Ultimate Reality.
Well, that brings us right to where we are here today in the Sky Dome for the Ultimate Challenge. Let's go to our ring announcer, Howard Finkel.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event of WrestleMania 6. It is scheduled for one fall, and it is title for title. Introducing first, weighing 275 pounds, the Intercontinental Champion, the Ultimate Warrior.
Listen to the ovation, Jeff, for the Ultimate Warrior. Here he comes. He's running.
You know, I think that's a mistake. He should be conserving his strength right here. He's facing the challenge of his life, Gorilla.
Well, you may have a point there, Jesse. However, this guy's in great shape. A lot of Ultimate Warrior fans here, Jeff, supporters. This place is going bananas.
67,000 of them have waited for this moment, Gorilla Monsoon.
It's deafening. And they are giving him the accolades he so richly deserves.
Well, it's going to be interesting because it seems the crowd, side-wise, is about 50-50. It's a toss-up, the same as the match.
Well, we'll find out in just a moment.
Here's a moment from NXT California, weighing 303 pounds, the World Wrestling Federation.
right, let's fucking get this match. There's been 20 minutes of build-up. All right, so...
It deserves it.
It fucking does indeed. Now, Warrior runs to the ring. He's fucking awesome. Gets a great pop. You know,
not as big as I thought it was going to be, I have to say. Still a huge pop, though.
You know what's cool about the Skydome as well is they had these, like... really widescreen TVs, you know, blasted around the arena. Because usually they're big, dirty, you know, 240p square ones, you know. But, I thought it looks really cool. So when Hogan comes to the ring next and he looks awesome, and there's a great shot of Hulk Hogan getting in the ring and Warrior still on, like, the second ropes looking back.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, it's a really cool shot.
I actually thought that Hogan got, like, a much bigger pop, even though you could hear boos, though. But just overall, like, the decibel level was far higher.
Okay, so we start the match with an awesome test each other out spot with big shoves. We got a kind of seesaw test strength. We also get the infamous blowjob gif where Warrior's like, <"Rrr,"> and he's down.
What was the fucking director thinking? Like, just change the fucking camera.
So this match, you could tell pretty quickly. Because the nature of the other matches that this was meticulously laid out ahead of time,
yeah,
and rehearsed a lot, and it shows. Well done, Pat Patterson. Maximum crowd reaction for minimum effort is like, booked to feel really huge. Like, no other matches are booked like this.
Totally 50-50 booking. Warrior would kind of win the test of strength, then Hogan would make his comeback and Warrior would sell for a while, and then one would pose and the other would pose and they'd just do the same moves, just total 50-50. Really fucking awesome. Great booking. We get a crisscross, which is followed by Hogan slamming Warrior, and then Warrior pops up right away and no-sells it, which leads into another crisscross, and then Warrior slams Hogan, who does sell it, despite them being really even, and Warrior's just a little bit stronger, and maybe Hogan's time has come. It was amazing. What a spot.
Awesome. There's a collar and elbow tie-up and the push-off, eventually. It really looks like WrestleMania X8 with Hogan and Rock, with the pushing and the poses and stuff like that. Hogan gets clotheslined to the outside, and then Hogan starts selling the knee. Oh, the knee's gone, brother. The knee's gone. So I think it was Shawn Taker. They started doing, oh, my knee's fucked. Let's not do the match. But, oh, I'm actually all right. And the match is going to go on ahead. It's a bit mean. Don't play with my emotions.
Yeah, he sells it for about 30 seconds. You know, after that point,
there's
no, yeah, you know, surely there'd be some kind of residual pain. But no, he's fine.
Oh, it was hilarious. So when Hogan gets back in the ring, Warrior starts working over his knee.
Really heelish, wasn't it? Yeah.
Hogan stopped selling the knee straight afterwards. So yeah, I guess you were grand then. You didn't blow it out.
Mm.
Yeah, the crowd, they just eat everything up. They love it all. Hogan tries to kill the crowd with an endless reverse chin lock.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't lose the crowd though. But eventually Warrior breaks it and gets a double clothesline.
There was a little bit of a pattern developing there at this stage in the match. You'd have a rest hold, bit of action, rest hold, bit of action, spurts of action, if you will. It should have killed the match, but it didn't.
Oh, this was great. It was like, I thought about you, Steve, and I was like, the rules! Earl only counts wrestlers out when they're on their back, and when they turn over to rest on their tummy, stops the count.
Really?
Yeah.
Gorilla makes the point that once you make it up to one knee, that the count should be stopped. But you're saying that he just stopped counting when they turned over. That's just wrong.
Cool. Warrior hooks up and goes on offense, mostly running clotheslines until he slows it down with a big bear hug as the crowd chant for Hogan. Hogan escapes the bear hug and
eventually, Jesus Christ.
There's a quick exchange and Earl takes a ref bump. Hogan sidesteps Warrior's shoulder tackle and goes for the pin, but Earl sells like death. Vice versa happens and eventually Hogan kicks out. Then they trade near falls.
I'm getting the impression at this point that Hogan was playing the more heelish role in the match. He was taking control of it. Warrior's acting like the plucky underdog babyface who keeps coming back.
Yeah.
But somebody had to play that role, and I think Warrior couldn't control the match.
I think that's the exact reason, just that Warrior actually isn't capable of doing, of leading a match. Like, so
it worked fine.
Warrior gets him up for the gorilla press slam and backsplash, but Hulk kicks out and Hulk's up.
And he is ignoring those big right hands by the Warrior. big splash. 1, 2. He got him! He got him! Unbelievable! The Warriors won the title! We have a new World Wrestling Federation champion!
And new World Wrestling Federation champion! The Ultimate Warrior!
This place has gone crazy! Unbelievable, Matsus! What a battle!
Hogan hits the big boot, but misses the big leg. Warrior hits the big splash from the canvas and barely gets the three as Hogan kind of jumps out just after three.
Yeah, I've this cunt written that.
You know, cunt written right there.
That's so awesome. You know, if you're going to put someone over, don't kick out directly at three. You know, if you're putting someone over, put their move over, just stay down for an extra 5 seconds.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Cunt Hogan intentionally deviates from the script here as he makes sure everyone feels bad for him as opposed to celebrating with Warrior.
First he has a tantrum, then he walks in front of the hard camera at ringside. So Warrior's in the ring, Hogan's standing in front of him. Then there's a close-up of him crying as he grabs the belt to bring it in. Then he hands the belt to Warrior. Then the camera follows him to the back while Warrior celebrates. And he's on the truck going to the back and it's going at a bit... less. It's like 1 mile a day.
This actually, believe it or not, this didn't bother me too much because I thought Hogan got in and out fairly quickly and left it for a Warrior. I'd blame more on the person with the camera and who's in charge backstage of actually telling them to follow Hogan to the back. You should have spent about 2 seconds on Sad Hogan and then on Warrior going, no! Best in the world!
Well, he wasn't supposed to do any of that. He wasn't supposed to grab the belt. Reminds me of fucking WrestleMania 4 when Face Macho Man won the World Championship. Who's the first person to grab the belt? Fucking Hogan. Like, that pissed me off so much. And I ate it up as a child. I couldn't enjoy Warriors. You know, he does. You can see it on the big Sky Dome going, rah, rah, I've got both belts. That was supposed to be awesome, but all I could think of is, fuck, man, Hulk Hogan, I'm so sad for him.
Yeah.
The commentators and Ventura, and they're completely enraptured by Hulk Hogan and feel bad for him as well. So the main story is not we're in a new era, a new day, a new biggest face in the company. It's like, feel bad for Hulk Hogan. Poor sweet Hogan did the job. Once in fucking 6 years.
Yeah.
And when you talk about, what did HBK say to Bret Hart at WrestleMania 12? Get the fuck out of my ring or whatever. And at the time I was like, oh, what a cock. But he's actually right. It's like, this is my fucking big moment. Now get the fuck off the camera, like. And that's exactly what Hogan did not do.
I think Sean was slightly more cuntish.
He didn't have to say it so meanly, but I do agree with his sentiment. This is his moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Same here.
So yeah, Hogan is off to film Suburban Commando. And we'll have to see how Warrior does. But for now, WWF hasn't been so awesome yet. A new babyface, a new day in the WWF. What would happen with the one Warrior Nation? What would happen with a man with two championships? We'll have to find out next time on OSW Review.
We're actually entering a period that I'm very hazy on. So I'm looking forward to seeing
before your next. Ultra sharp 93. Payoffs. So, Hogan got $1.1 million for this match. What do you think Warrior got paid?
$600,000.
Very good, actually. $650,000.
That sounds about fair to me.
Just a bit under half. Yeah.
Hogan is the draw.
Yeah,
you could probably have Hogan and Savage, as you're saying. You still get a good buy rate, but if it was Warrior and Savage?
No.
As far as the match goes, it seems to be, this especially was almost a blueprint for future WWE main events and WWF main events. If this was picked as a blueprint, I'm not surprised because it was so well done. And you know, I'm not a big fan of real slow plotting matches, but this had me on the edge of my seat, even though I knew the result.
So I take it you were enthralled by the balls as well.
I was involved.
Very good.
Any of you spot Edge in the front row?
No, I was thinking, I can either go looking for him for 3.5 hours or...
Just check the feds one day where they show him.
This didn't do as well as they had hoped. Mania was down this year. But I have to say, like, if you're looking at like the Mega Powers Explode, that was a one-year build, you know. This is, you've only gone with Warrior for 2 months, really, 3 months, you know.
And I wonder, had the kind of Hogan apathy set in by this point, like, were the fans ready for the change? You know, so is that why there's less people buying it, you know?
But then you'd hope there'd be more people buying it, too, because they were almost...
Although, I'd imagine most people would expect that Hogan... Well, I'm sure there was a lot of people that were thinking, oh, Hogan's not losing.
No one's bigger than Hulk Hogan. As much as they might try to put Warrior on the same plate, no, Hogan's always bigger. I'm trying to think, imagine in 98 with Stone Cold beat Shawn Michaels in a kind of passing of the torch attitude era start. Mm-hmm. Imagine if the camera stayed on Shawn Michaels going, oh, my back, my eye, oh, poor, what was me, you know?
My smile.
Very good. Yeah. All right, I gotta do this. It's the final pay-per-view for one more guy here.
Oh, fuck off.
This is going to hit you the worst of everyone, I think.
It's Jesse.
Fuck. Yeah. Last pay-per-view with Jesse Ventura. It was over a dispute with Sega using his image, and Vinnie Mac had a contract with Nintendo, and they couldn't resolve it, and he'd be gone before SummerSlam.
Wow. Holy shit.
Yeah, it was odd to hear Ventura compliment Hogan, as for years Ventura was Hogan's biggest detractor, absolutely fucking hated him. Like, and his shoot hated him for ratting him out to Vince back in 1987 when he tried to form a union. Like, just with Ventura, like, things would only get worse between himself and Vince when he was not given any VHS royalties. Because Vince had just told him, we don't pay commentators for VHS, it's just the live shows, you know. And he said, okay. A couple of years later, he found out, and I said, what the fuck is this? And he successfully sued Vince for $800,000 in 1991. Good. He'd make sporadic appearances in the WWF in the Attitude Era and show up every few years, basically. And he was inducted in the 2004 Hall of Fame and would do commentary one more time nearly 20 years later, guest GM, November 23rd, 2009, Raw, with Vince, and this awesome, like, lime blue jacket. Like, really sad to see him go, man. He was the fucking business, and the pioneer of, like, heel commentators. Mm. We didn't have heel commentators back in the day. Just him. Vince was all for it as well. He said, just lay into them as much as you can. You know, but just, like, get over the storylines and the characters. But yeah, go fucking nuts. And it's up for the other commentator to put him in his place.
Like, I personally found Michael Cole, when he did his heel gimmick, to be very entertaining. But in terms of, like, getting over the product and getting over wrestlers and storylines and stuff, man, Jesse Ventura, like, as a heel commentator, greatest ever. I saw Jesse was so good.
Sad to see him go, but we do push on and we do get new talents. You know, if we stopped here, where would the Berserker be?
Vince agreed to let me go do things outside of wrestling. And I had a chance to spend some time with him. He invited me to come to his place. And they're all there. Vince is there and Pat Patterson. I don't know who else was there. And Vince said they've got ulterior motives. And then he went and got Jerry Briscoe. We went in the shower and he proceeded to have Jerry Briscoe from the backside. He was a real hard worker. Just a grunty style. Like, he was grunt. So I was interested to get involved. And I told him what I wanted to do. You know, have people put around me that could direct me effectively so I could go on and be successful at it and stuff. There were plenty of guys there, and it just grew. So we both let one another F it. And they were congratulating me, saying, man, that was awesome. This is really great. And late that night, Linda came into the picture. And I said, this is a natural, you know. I've just never been into any of that stuff. You know, women and, you know, all that stuff and everything. That doesn't work for me. I almost fell on my knees and just started throwing up right there. And then something told me to come. And he said, don't come. You don't need to come. And I said, what do you mean, don't come? It's what I wanted to do. And I didn't push it in their face. And he said, okay. It was unbelievable. It was a shoot. And I had incredible discipline. And it was magic. Next morning, about 11:45, Vince eventually stepped in. He couldn't even walk right. He stepped in and said, I'm not doing this anymore. we're not doing this stuff. And I was really surprised that he did that. Like he just wanted to keep going from one thing to the next, as long as somebody would stick it out. I mean, he had an addiction problem, and, you know, I would have expected more.
I mean, I feel bad for you guys when I look, because I...
Extra hour.
Yeah.
Oh, God, Jesus. I hate you.
It's probably a different show I'm watching than you, but, like, my 2.5 hours flew by, like... Don't watch them, man. Don't watch them.
Managers.
That'll do it for this week, lads. Thank you for watching, or listening, hopefully both. Next time on OS... never mind. Next time on OSW Review, no need for jackets or brollies. Break out the Magnum ice cream bars. It's SummerSlam 1990, and for the first time in SummerSlam history, it's not a fucking obligatory tag match main event.
That's great. You.
Nice.
Although, you wouldn't know from the poster, because it definitely looks like it.
Actually, leave it. Don't tell me what it is.
No, you have to.
Good night, folks. Yeah, alright then, I won't. So remember, you can catch all of our episodes, fuck, free of charge and in blistering 4:3 full screen at oswreview.com. Subscribe to us via iTunes at itunes.oswreview.com, and you might even get the next episode a few days early. So it's a goodbye from Mr. OSE.
Hey.
And V1.
We're after.
And myself, Jay Hunter. And remember, a winner is you. Arriba! Sorry.
By the way, Jay.
Yeah.
Magnum's went out in 91, you fucking moron.
Mario ice pops. Remember those bad boys? Or Freaky Foots. Remember that was Freaky Foots. Wibbly Wobbly Wonders. Yeah, they do.
What was it? Fat Frogs.
Oh, I miss Fat Frogs.
Yeah, they're not around.
They were awesome. They actually came back a couple of years ago and were really popular for a while.